Blog Talk Radio.
Network of David Duenas. I'm your host, Steve K9 Kim, and joined as always from the beautiful city of San Francisco, my partner in crime, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Good Monday to you.
We have a busy show ahead, but if you want to call in, we'll take your calls about 15 to 20 minutes. That number, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you could do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. But let's get started with round number one. It was the 2015 debut of Boxing After Dark from the First Bank Center near Denver, Colorado. Welterweights in action, and folks, this trilogy was an absolute sham to a lot of degrees. Brandon Bam Bam Rios stops Mike Alvarado in three rounds. Rios goes to 33-2 as he keeps his relevancy alive. And Mike Alvarado, quite frankly, folks, I think he's going to Bolivian. In the co-feature, super middleweight prospect Gilberto Ramirez in a catchweight fight does enough in 10 rounds to defeat Maxim Vlasov. Gabe, I saw some of your tweets on Saturday night, and it seemed to me like you were absolutely disgusted by the fact that Mike Alvarado had a non-performance, not just in the fight, but leading into it. And in your mind, this was pretty damn disgraceful, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of false advertising. I mean, here you are in your own hometown, which, you know, we've seen this several times over the years with many different fighters. Hometown isn't always an advantage. Sometimes it's a disadvantage, especially when you have a penchant for getting in trouble the way that Mike Alvarado does. But for HBO to pretend like this was any sort of something new after he'd been arrested during camp, you know, his camp, those are good people, and they're just sitting by kind of looking embarrassed because he wasn't prepared. He had enough in the tank for a few rounds. It was not a few-round fight. And he quits on his stool. I mean, people paid money to see it. People pay money to get HBO. We all had expectations. People wrote stories. And everybody pretended like it was not going to be a big deal. And, boy, it sure was. And to hear a professional fighter say, you know, I didn't give it my best. What world are we living in? Aren't you on cable fighting for a lot of money? I thought it was pretty embarrassing for everybody involved.
Here's my particular take on the situation. I think everybody involved knew what was going to happen. It was an inevitability. It was a fait accompli. When he got arrested that early morning in January, a couple of weeks ago, because he was quote-unquote thirsty, and obviously he had no tap water or Avion handy in his refrigerator, they all knew what was going to happen, but I get the sense that his management, his training team, and even the promoters, they wanted to just get rid of Mike Alvarado. They did not want to wait on a postponement because they want to advance the career of Brandon Rios. I think in many respects this was a hit, a green light, or a cash out, that they're sick of Mike Alvarado, that they're at that point where they no longer want to deal with the issues. They still look at Brandon Rios as a more bankable entity from a television standpoint, and I think this is why they did not postpone the fight. Gabe, in talking to people in the 303 area, the worst-kept secret, Gabe, is that literally Mike Alvarado may have trained no more than 2 weeks, and it's going to be interesting. I'm not making any accusations, but more than one person is going to be very, very curious that I talk to that wants to see the drug test reports because he did not exactly train on raw eggs, water, and nails for breakfast. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm very curious to see the drug test reports. I mean, you know, for a lot of people, that marijuana went recreationally legal in Colorado was a good thing, but maybe not for professional athletes, because the rest of the world hasn't really caught up to that. And also, you know, too much of a good thing can slow you down, can make you lazy. You know, I'm not going to be down on marijuana, but I think, you know, if that's available and it's more readily available, maybe that did have something to play with it. But I think, you know, the guy has discipline issues. He always has. He's been in jail. That's always been his demon. But for me, okay, you know, it's going to fall on him if he doesn't pass the drug test result. He got the hell beat out of him for not being prepared, and what a lot of people will now refer to as, I think it's a Larry Merchant line, the ring is a truth machine. I think he was actually talking about Antonio Margarito. The ring is that as well. And, it, you know, Rios beat the truth out of him. But the bottom line is that everybody around them that was selling people tickets seemed to know that this guy wasn't right, and if it was a hit, I mean, isn't that a bit false advertising? You're kind of selling everybody the end of a great trilogy, and everybody knows it's not the end of a great trilogy. I have a little bit of a problem with that, but let's, you know, I want to be more positive, as the Brit likes to say. I thought Brandon Rios looked great. He showed up prepared. He understood what this fight was that here's two guys fighting for their futures. Who wants to have a future? Mike Alvarado apparently doesn't want to have a future at this level. Brandon Rios certainly does. I mean, he kept saying it throughout camp, and I kept believing him. We'd see him looking good. Now, you know, I thought his jab was good. His defense is nice. I love the way he gets inside, and he doesn't just use his arms. He's able to use kind of position his upper body, turn, nudge you off with his shoulder very subtly, and then kind of pop you with a jab or corral you with a hook into something else. He's such a subtle guy. And for him to now kind of show veteran guile, patience and experience, but also discipline to go with all of that, he could make a little run. I mean, is he going to be beating people at the top level at welterweight? I don't know. I mean, there's multiple universes, so he's really only dealing with the top-ranked universe. I think he could be competitive given the right matchup. He's always going to be entertaining. So it was nice to see at least one guy take this seriously. Mike Alvarado, though, he betrayed, you know, the public trust. And I think to some extent Tom Frank did as well.
I hope anyone that's out there driving today is pulling over, because I'm going to make a statement that's going to shock people and might have you driving off the road or careening off the highway. I got to give Andre Ward a lot of credit, because during this particular fight, I thought he broke it down very well. And he talked about one of the misnomers about Brandon Rios. Brandon Rios has skill, but it's based on being on the inside in the mid-range and working his way and burrowing inside and throwing very good hooks and uppercuts and putting together sequences of punches. Brandon Rios gets hit more on the outside than he does the inside, much like an Antonio Margarito. His skill set and what he does best is basically going chest to chest. And you're right, certain styles, Gabe, the real athleticism, guys with lateral movement that can hit on the fly, they're always going to be able to nullify him. But if you give him guys that want to do some trench warfare, you better pack your lunch and a hard hat. The other issue, and we talked about this a little bit last week, Gabe, they fought in altitude. When Brandon Rios took the advice of some people that really know what they're doing by going out to Colorado, not just 7 to 10 days early, but about 21 days early, I think it's ironic. He may have gotten in more good training days in the state of Colorado in the 303 than Mike Alvarado. And I agree. I thought he had a good sense of purpose, fought with a sense of urgency, fought with a certain spark he hadn't had. But, Gabe, I'm going to be the buzzkill here. As much as I like Brandon Rios, how much of this was a mirage given the fact this was batting practice? This was hitting off of a heavy bag, because Mike Alvarado, as the old-timers would say, had absolutely nothing.
That's the thing. Yeah, how good was this? You know, we're going to look back at this fight and go, well, you know, this fight will, you know, will probably like gain or you know, lose in reflection, depending on how Rios fights or who he fights next. Because, you know, in some ways, I mean, a lot of people are saying it's the best Brandon looked, but, you know, you're putting him in with a guy that has literally no bullets, no gun, kind of a rubber knife.
Hold on. Gabe, he had a gun a couple weeks ago. I'll go correct you on that. He had a gun. That's where you're wrong, Gabe, and that was the problem.
Exactly. He had a gun and the munchies. It doesn't even matter if, you know, what the former was not his. But, yeah, and so that's the thing. You know, how good how good was he? The sense I got in the fight was that, you know, they started out kind of feeling each other out for them in the first 30 seconds to a minute. Brandon realized, this guy's got nothing. I'm going to just sprint. I'm going to throw everything at him. And, you know, Brandon threw over, like, what, 100 punches around or thereabouts, threw a lot of punches, and just basically stayed on the gas. And he just went right to the – you're going to need a – if you're going to bring equipment against him, you're going to need a flak jacket as well, because the guy just kills your ribs. And that uppercut is a thing of beauty. And he throws that uppercut hook uppercut combination like few people in the sport. He knows exactly what they're for. And so, yeah, I mean, you kind of blitzed a guy out of there that already didn't want to be there. I mean, that's usually when a guy hasn't trained. I mean, he's got inside of him that I could always quit. I have an excuse. I'm not in shape. And the job of the guy in shape, the guy that still has something left, is to make him give in to that impulse. That's exactly what Brandon did. It made him quit. And so, you know, credit to him for doing his job and for looking good. I mean, he didn't even look tired, in those few rounds. I mean, for the pace that Brandon set, it seemed like he could keep going forever. And smart on him to acclimate, you know. I'm very curious to see all the results afterwards, though.
The two images that I have of Mike Alvarado on fight night was the first hard piece of leather that hit him shook him. His punch resistance, I think, is gone. And do I think that's directly tied into conditioning or lack thereof? Absolutely. He had no reflexes, no speed, no snap. He just didn't have it. He looked like a spent bullet. The other thing that is the indelible image was when he stepped out of the ring and started, you know, doing the interviews and then went to his locker room. I have to tell you, the 303, I think they think more highly of the Oakland Raiders and Kobe Bryant in that state, in that city, than they do Mike Alvarado. They have turned on him. The catcalls and the taunts that he was subjected to, not saying I feel bad for him, because basically he brought it on himself with the way he really was an unprofessional guy for the past, I would say, at least 3-4 months. But I don't even see how he could headline ever again in the state of Colorado or Denver. And if you're HBO, based on that performance and everything you talked about, Gabe, I don't invest in him at all. It would not surprise me if HBO released him, given the fact that he is the mile-high version of Kelly Pavlik in certain ways. And I talked to some of his camp members. They believe themselves that he should be put down. Gabe, Gilberto Ramirez, I like him as a prospect, but I'll tell you this. I know he's 31-0. But I think he's still a pretty good long ways away from really being in the upper echelon at 168.
Yeah, that's a guy that you know, I don't think he looked terrible. People went kind of crazy. Twitter seems to overreact a lot. I thought that you know, he's young. He's 23, right? Something around there.
Yes, yes, he is.
He's still developing. And you know, who's going to look good against Vlasov? Difficult, herky-jerky style, the kind of guy that as his fists are coming forward, the rest of his body is going backward because he doesn't want to get hit with anything. Just super cagey. So I thought this was one of those fights where you got to see what your kid's got. Not in terms of his power. We've already seen him kind of blow people out or kill people in the body and break them in half. But what are you going to do with a guy that you're going to have to box and that you're going to have to figure out how to score on? Because he's so herky-jerky, you may not be able to put more than two punches at a time on him, if you can even get that. And I thought he really was very poised. He went to the body. He stayed with his jab, even when he was getting tired in the late rounds. I thought it was a really good fight for him. It's the kind of fight that you find out the depth of character and intelligence that your guy's got and his poise, and that he's able to kind of go, all right, this isn't going to be one where I overwhelm this guy and corral him and get him out of there. I'm going to have to use other things. And is he fast? Not really. I don't even know how hard he hits. He hits hard enough. He didn't get overwhelmed, Ramirez. So I thought this was a good win. I think this will be kind of a win that we'll see the benefits of, you know, down the line.
I liked his body attack. I thought he made a concerted effort against a naturally bigger foe who's experienced. I think the one thing he needs to develop, Gabe, as a southpaw, and he was never able to layer that body attack with anything over the top, is a right hook. And that is a blind punch for orthodox fighters. When you face left-handers, that right hook literally comes out of left field. And that's one thing I thought was missing was that there was a paint-by-numbers approach to his attack. and he never layered it. But again, you're right. He is 23 years old, and it's fights like this that aren't glamorous. They're not sexy performances. They're not eye-opening. This is where you really learn something about the professional game. Gabe, moving on here before we get to the calls, and again, that number, 347-215-7598, Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya, a full 90-minute edition of the next round here on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. Gabe, it was announced last week. It was made official. It could be May 2nd, and I'm being told this date is flexible based on that other fight, the never-ending story, as Doug Fisher says, but it could be in San Antonio. Saul Alvarez takes on James Kirkland. We talked about it very late last week. It is a done deal. Well, done as any deal that can be with James Kirkland. Gabe, call me excited. I like this matchup, and I like the fact this precocious kid from Mexico, he's not going to get held hostage by Pacquiao, Mayweather, or Miguel Cotto. He's going to do what he's going to do.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think it's going to come down to James's trainer. But, I mean, this is the kind of fight. I may travel for this fight. You may have to get me a credential, and I may have to get me down there to Texas, or maybe just buy a ticket. This is everything he's wanted. He wants to be at that top level. But James has taken, you know, the quote-unquote scenic route, getting there and kind of getting in his own way at times. I haven't heard back from Ann yet. So I don't know what the training situation is, and that's a little bit unusual. Although I found she had lost her phone, and so you know, she's in the process of like finding out what the names belong to what numbers. So maybe I'll find out by the end of this show, hopefully, if she's going to do it. I think it's going to be a complicated thing in terms of who trains James. The big question is, what shape is he in right now, heading into whatever training camp with whoever he's training with? That's going to be the big key. Is he 200-pound James? You know, literally big game James, or is he, you know, ready to get in shape James? We'll see.
Boy, well, what an insult to the great James Worthy. It's more like weight gain James. Now, here's what I was told by his advisor, Mike Miller, on the record. They have to still meet with Ann Wolf. That issue is still unresolved. James Kirkland is scheduled to be at the Cowboy Dance Hall in San Antonio for the Golden Boy Show tonight, which, by the way, starts in a couple hours. I think it's a very good show. But getting back to the issue here, Mike Miller himself said, I want Ann Wolf. James Kirkland, at his optimum best, is with the Wolf Ann. And I really believe if he wants to give himself the best chance to upset Canelo, and he's got a lot of weight to lose, I think it is with her. Mike Miller also told me that on Friday and Saturday in San Antonio that he did spar, but there is some weight to work off. And, you know, this fight's at 155. It's not a title fight, so I'm not really bothered by it. And I also hope it's in San Antonio. I love the statement that Canelo is making here. I mean, he always says, I'm a star. And I just love the fact that he's not going to be dictated to. And I'm telling you right now, I think there is a huge backlash against Miguel Cotto because I think that that is the fight the fans wanted. Cotto against Canelo. And I have a feeling that if the Mayweather-Cotto fight, if that's the one that comes to fruition, I would absolutely love to see how much a Kirkland-Canelo fight on that same day on free HBO would affect those pay-per-view numbers, Gabe.
Oh, I love it. Well, it's, you know, real fights don't have to be sold, you know, and if James is in good shape, I mean, Ann's camps, I mean, you know, the rust, I don't think it's going to be a huge factor for him. It's not like he's a sharpshooting boxer puncher. He's going in there to crowd, throw as many punches as he can. I would love to have seen this be one of those fights where James had three fights and some momentum heading into it. I think that's always when he's at his best with Ann. But, you know, regardless, it is what it is, and we've got what we've got. You know, Canelo is a real draw. I think they're going to sell a lot of tickets. I think Golden Boy knows how to get that done down there. Maybe they don't price him as crazy, considering they're going to be competing. But, you know, Mexicans love a real fight. And, on some level, I don't want to denigrate Cotto Mayweather too, because I actually think he's got an interesting chance still. I think Cotto's, you know, is experienced and is durable as anybody out there. Like, I think he's got enough left. But do I think he's going to win? No. But it's still a real fight. But I think this one is a real action fight. You know, if it's a Floyd fight, it's going to be 12 rounds. We know who's going to win. Boring. We've done that before. We've even done this fight before. But Canelo Kirkland is you know, there's a lot of intangibles. It's just the most exciting fight that's on paper right now. You add Ann Wolfe into the mix, if she's really there and the promotion is going to be on fire. I think, you know, it's not exactly like Miguel Cotto's Captain Gregarious. And Floyd's shtick is what it is. You either like it or you don't. That's going to be a hard sell. Cotto or Canelo versus Kirkland, that's not a hard sell. That's not a hard sell at all. So that's going to be very interesting.
Let's go to the Twitter timeline here. The president, Andrew V. Kennedy, he's our Ricky Henderson. He leads off. Could Rios have a little renaissance off of Saturday night, or was Mile High just miles gone? Also, is ESPN upset with license fees? Okay, after the fight, Bob Arum, I asked him on Press Row, what's next for Brandon Rios? And he says, Vargas, Bradley, Rios, Miguel Cotto, those four I'd like to mix and match. Gabe, when you went Vargas, then Bradley, then Rios, then Cotto, that sounds like one of those SAT questions, I think. Out of these four things, which one doesn't belong? Cotto's like a middleweight, junior middleweight, right? Does he really belong with these 140, 47-pounders?
Well, no, but I mean he's a, you know, he's kind of like a smaller junior middle, but that's where he's comfortable now. Freddie seems to think he could go to 47, and kind of talked about that before they decided to go for the middleweight title. But, you know, I guess it depends on, you know, is he looking to put these other guys at a disadvantage and kind of feed Miguel Cotto? Or is he looking to feed Miguel Cotto to those other guys and hope that, you know, one of these guys will be the magic guy that can unseat him? And I thought it was a very strange lineup of people to have Miguel Cotto in the mix, especially when you're kind of looking at treating it like a round robin as opposed to, like, you know, Miguel Cotto is the middleweight champion of the world and a bit of a franchise. I thought it was a very strange choice.
The trio of Vargas, Bradley, and Rios, who all compete between 40 and 47, I think those are good fights. I think Bradley Rios could be like a poor man's version of Chavez Taylor 1. Real athletic black guy that throws a lot of punches, not the heaviest handed guy, but maybe too brave for his own good against the real roughneck on the inside that could break a guy down. I tell you what, I don't know how Cameron Duncan feels about it since he represents both fighters. But if you made Bradley Rios, you wouldn't get any complaints from the Kimster. Gabe, ESPN, the reason why the president brings this up is that I'm hearing, with all these time buys that Al Haymon is doing with these various networks, ESPN, from what I've been told by several sources, is kind of looking around saying, excuse me, wait a minute. Why are we still giving out money for fights if everyone else is getting paid? Gabe, this is all part, I would say, of the Haymon effect.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you're looking around at it, and I was reading a few articles today about it, and it's interesting, like, people look at it and say, well, the market's being distorted by Al, because everybody's got to pay for all these B-sides, and he signed, like, 10 more guys. He's got, what, like, 160 fighters at this point. He's got Spike TV. He's got NBC, both the regular network and then, like, you know, NBC Sports, right, or the other, like, kind of cable version. And he still has some sway over at Showtime, it would appear. And we keep hearing there's going to be more announced, like some other deal is going to be announced. I fully expect it to be his own channel, you know, sort of like De La Hoya TV, but I think a little bit bigger and already kind of formed. You know, I don't know. I think that the market is being forced to act like Al, to pay what Al pays. You look at the model, and he's building something gigantic. He's building a UFC, Haymon Boxing, or Premier Boxing. And you look at Top Rank and even Golden Boy, and they're still kind of signing one guy at a time. Although, you know, Golden Boy just signed a bunch of young guys hoping something will pan out. But they're all kind of still doing the same model of hoping to build, like, one fighter in a region. Maybe he gets big and catches fire like a Pacquiao. But you're building, you know, your Terrence Crawford in, like, one spot, hope a lot of people come. Look at, you know, Canelo's going to go to Texas, hope a lot of people come. You build a regional draw there. I just think it's too early to tell what the market is anymore, because it has been kind of just bent out of shape by Al Haymon, and everybody else is kind of having to get in line.
Yeah, Al Haymon, I think, will be announcing a deal on a couple more networks, and it wouldn't surprise me if he starts getting on Oprah's network, C-SPAN, or PBS. And he's signing a lot of fighters, not just marquee champions or A-sides. He's signing Flotsam and Jetsam, for a reason. Here's one from Stonebox. Does Chavez Fonfaro go through, or will Bob Arum put a stop to it? Gabe, this is what I find interesting. They've announced a date, April 18th. Okay, that's fine. We don't have a venue. We don't have a network. We don't even really have anything else than that. I don't know. I think anything with Chavez right now, seeing is believing.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think the only fight he's going to have this year is court, unless it really gets, you know, resolved. I really don't – I just don't see how they're going to – you know, what the plan is, because there's this contract that apparently he's under. So until that gets solved, you know, I don't know what else to say. It's very strange.
Patrick Hubble tweets, is HBO showing the Golovkin-Murray fight by itself on February 21st, and is Hopkins the next likely opponent for Golovkin in May? From what I've been told, Patrick, I don't think there's any other plans to show another fight. I'm going to be making some phone calls after this show. And, Gabe, as it relates to Golovkin in May, here's my take on it. You're a middleweight. Do whatever you can to consolidate the middleweight division. If there is a fight that I do want to see Hopkins, I would say it's Carl Froch, but Froch has made it very clear he is waiting on Julio Cesar Chavez.
Yeah, I mean, I think Froch gets it. I mean, he kind of wants his big cash out. I don't see, you know, but again, it's like Chavez is kind of becoming the Mexican Andre Ward at this point. You know, he wants to do things, but there's this whole legal aspect that you're going to have to get over. And then to kind of figure out where he is in terms of his shape, his weight, you know, I mean, it wasn't like he was looking great when we last saw him. So I think it's, you know, Chavez is weird. He's like a franchise in exile, but on a lot of fronts, because I just don't know, you know, I just don't know what material is there. He's still got a name, and he kind of has the arrogance of a guy that's one of the best fighters in the world. Really, he's got just the arrogance of a guy that's the son of a great fighter, and he's been maneuvered pretty well, and now kind of is biting the hand that's fed him all these years.
Here's a tweet from Robert.
He never fights again.
Here's one with Robert Buffa. Is the new PBC strategy to only announce fights a month or two out in order to minimize drug testing protocols? That's interesting, Gabe. Huh.
Yeah. I've seen variations on it. You either, you know, with Al's guys, I think it's a certain measure of control. Like they talk about, oh, Al really works with us, and, you know, he's really all about the fighter, and they get paid very well. So, of course, they're saying that. But there's no, I mean, it goes against like the history of the sport. So really, you know, at least at the top level, to never really know when your next fight's going to be. And this was like Sean Porter didn't know, and he was a champion. All of a sudden, it's, you know, Pauly Malignaggi, and he's got like 4 weeks. He'd heard some whispers that maybe it was him. It was going to be Pauly. So he started preparing a couple weeks in advance. But that seems to be the whole thing. Is kind of controlling the whole process. As for the drug testing, I still haven't really heard back about this Olympic-style random testing, quote-unquote, that's being touted to go along with the Premier Boxing League. And, you know, I think some guys, like I've heard Miguel Cotto, that was the last thing he asked Martinez for at the last second, was drug testing. I think they did USADA, from what I understand. But it was like, you know, he kind of hit Martinez kind of, you know, out of nowhere with it. And on his time, he decided when it was going to happen. And, yeah, I think guys do kind of control – or okay, I won't say for a fact, but I think that's one way you could control somebody else's cycle, or certainly, you know, control yours being detected, is by, you know, controlling that aspect of the drug testing. I mean, think about it. Floyd Mayweather gets – people say he does it random. He doesn't do it random. You know, he does it twice a year at the same time for several years with the same company that he pays. You know, what he pays them for, I don't know, but that's not random when you know twice a year you're being tested. So, yeah, I mean, it is a way to circumvent it, no doubt.
Here is a tweet, final one from Rebecca before we move on to the phone calls and then news and notes later on. Gilberto Ramirez needs more work for sure, but neither fighter had much on their punches. Would like to see him again in lesser altitude. All right, 347-215-7598. That is the number. We are here for another hour on the next round. Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
All right. In the 530, you're live on the next round.
Good evening, Steve. Gabe, ringside Robert here. What do you guys think Golovkin is going to do? I mean, I think he's going to beat Martin Murray, but what does he do after that with so many people not wanting to fight him? I mean, I've heard people who don't like him say, well, he hasn't fought anybody. You can't force Miguel Cotto to get in the ring. You know, he's going to have to at some point if he wants to hang on to that middleweight title. But what does Golovkin do? He's kind of in no man's land, don't you think?
Well, he's been in there. Listen, he's like Gilligan. He's on a three-hour tour. That's taking a lot longer than 3 hours. What my understanding is that if he gets past Murray February 21st in Monte Carlo, his return date might be May 16th. Now, they played a game of cat and mouse here with the WBC by facing Rubio, paying for that interim title. Remember, whether Mayweather has that title or Cotto, eventually that guy's going to have to face Golovkin or give up the belt. I think what Golovkin has to do is continue to stay busy, and if you can't get the fights, just don't sit around and chase fights that are non-existent. Build a career, and I think thus far that formula has worked.
Yeah, well, I'm very impressed with what he's done because he'll fight anybody literally anywhere. He'll go anywhere to fight anybody. But, you know, how long does this continue before somebody finally has to step in the ring and say, okay, I've got to fight this guy?
Well, I'm just going to say it. He has to just keep putting his nose to the grindstone. And anyone that says he hasn't fought anybody without couching it by saying, but he's tried and people are avoiding him, those people are ignorable.
Don't totally argue with morons.
It's really that simple.
Yeah, I totally agree. No, he's doing what he needs to do. Yeah, I mean, you know, because I run into it all the time when I'm on shows like this where people call in, and those that really don't know what Golovkin has done, they'll say, well, he hasn't fought anybody. Well, he's doing the best he can, and he doesn't need to move up or move down in weight. He'll stay busy. I mean, he's already said, after his last fight, I want to fight four times this year. So if he's got to fight four people that, you know, hardcores have heard of and regular people haven't, well, so be it.
Yeah, you can only fight who's available as well. I mean, it's just, and you can only fight who will fight you. Fight fans are very impatient. And, you know, Golovkin has been one of the most active champions. He's one of the most fun guys to fight, no matter who he's facing. You know, you never hear, oh, well, he kind of fights down to the level of his opposition with him. No, he just blows them out, knocks them unconscious or out of, you know, over the ropes. That's what he does. And so I think, like Steve says, he's just building, you know, just moving along and doing what he can do. And until somebody emerges, that's what we're going to see. I think Martin Murray's a real fight. If fight fans aren't looking forward to it, then I question how hardcore they actually are.
Well, there you go. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate your show, and I'm glad you're back.
All right. Thanks a lot, Robbie. Appreciate
thanks,
you participating,
man.
As always. Gabe, who's next?
In the 213, you're live on the next round.
Gentlemen, how you doing? Happy New Year. It's the only Sanch right here across from Tommy Trojan. How's it going?
Hey, folks? Fight on.
What's up, man?
What's going on? You know, it's some funny stuff going on in boxing. You know, we know Heyman signed a new deal with NBC. But what's funny is they're calling it Premier Boxing Champions when none of their champions are defending their belts on their broadcasts.
You know,
I
find
that kind of funny.
Thing. You know, Gabe, you know me. I've been one of the biggest advocates of Peterson Garcia. I think it's a very good style. I think it can turn out to be a very, very good fight. But the appeal of it is that it's like one of the final fights of the last generation of the 140-pounders. Both of these guys have belts. It was supposed to be a unification. Instead, it's some cockamamie catchweight at 143. Now, again, I'm not against catchweights. They're an important part of boxing history. But I think it's almost unheard of, and it's not the first time with this same group, where guys with partial belts fight other guys with belts, but not at that weight. To me, it takes off some of the luster of this particular fight.
Yeah, I mean, it just says it's all about, you know, money and leverage. And you know, no matter what happens in this fight, these guys are going to keep their belts. I mean, how many fights can Lamont Peterson lose while still maintaining a belt? It's kind of strange. I mean, I used to be one of those guys way back before I actually knew how the sport worked that felt like, you know, maybe we should get, you know, one champion per division. But, you know, the more I've been in it, you see how these guys make money and how it all works. I'm all for the multi-belt system. But when you game it like this, and like you said, it's kind of weird. I think the name Premier Boxing Champions is, or whatever, it's kind of strange. But, you know, if you're a champion, you're premier, is when somebody joked to me. But that they're not fighting for their belts. Yeah, what are we really getting? But that's why I'm always kind of skeptical of Heyman. It's not that I don't have some random thing against the guy. He's just trained me to be skeptical of it. So this is just one more example.
Yeah, definitely.
Guys, I have a theory. You know why? Guys, yeah. I have a theory. You know why this fight was made at 143? And me and Gabe talked about this after the Herrera fight, which was at 140. It was an official title fight. He looked like a guy that should be moving up in weight. He looked very drained, very dry, very flat. I thought one of the advantages that Peterson had is that he can still make junior welterweight and still be a very, very good physical specimen in there. And I think they gamed the system and they weighted this fight in favor of Danny Garcia because he's higher on the totem pole. And quite frankly, I think Lamont Peterson and Barry Hunter, they had absolutely no say in the matter, because if you ask them secretly, because they won't say it privately now or publicly, they simply had no choice. Either take it at 143 or leave it.
Definitely, definitely. Two points before I go out, guys. We all know Canelo's fighting Kirkland. I'm good with that. What do you see happening with Lucas, and is that fight going to be at StubHub, Steve? And what's going on with the Andy Lee purse bid? Is that going to be on HBO? What are we hearing about that?
All right, a couple of things here. In talking to Artie Palullo and some people at Golden Boy, March 28th is the target date to make, I think, one of the great pure fights for the fight fans of 2015. Lucas Matisse, the machine, against Ruslan Provodnikov. Now, Artie says that, hey, StubHub's right in the mix, but they're also talking to Las Vegas, which I'm But the thing that just made me throw up a little bit in my mouth was Atlantic City. Come on. But the fight, I think, is going to happen. HBO has what they call a first and a last. Artie says tomorrow HBO will make an offer. Then I believe Artie will take it to other networks, probably Showtime. Then he's got to come back to HBO. But, fellas, I believe this fight is on track to be consummated.
That's a great fight. I mean, it's just, you know, you would probably lean towards Lucas, but, you know, I want to see him in there with a guy that's kind of quick and a pressure guy that goes to the body, can change levels in Ruslan, and has legit power. I mean, if Molina can put down Matisse, I tend to think that Ruslan can hurt him. That's just a hell of a fight, but Atlantic City, is that even there anymore?
I mean, if they do it at Atlantic City, let Andre Ward go announce that. And thanks for telling me he was announcing Saturday, too, Steve. I'm all turning on the fight, excited, and then, Andre Ward. Let me put on HBO Spanish.
I want to be fair about this. I thought when he just was announcing the fight, specifically the main event, I thought he was very good. But when he started doing the agenda, and I read this on Twitter, when he starts trying to pump up or prop up Ramirez as a future great foe, and I can't wait, that's where he starts to jump the shark.
And then he has some agenda. He has something against when fans boo boring parts of the fights. I mean, he takes it personal. Like he must have heard so many boos that every time he hears boos, he just has to defend the fighter.
You know, this is the entertainment business, and if you pay
exactly.
your hard-earned money and you're bored, listen, no one has to eat a bad meal all the way through. If people want to leave halfway through a really bad movie, guess what? That's their right as a consumer.
I don't
good talking to you, fellas.
Honestly, if you can't handle a crowd booing you, if you can't handle, you know, you're performing in front of people, then don't perform in front of people. If you're that, you know, sensitive about it. I mean, you know, audiences are going to let you know how they feel. And if you're boring, you're boring. And, yeah, it doesn't make your job any less, any easier because you're fighting another person. But, yeah, I agree with you, Steve. And most of those people, if you're paying to see a boxing match, you know what you're looking at. You're not an ignorant fan. You know, most of the people there, I'm sure, were hardcore boxing fans. And if you're not entertained, you're not entertained. And if you paid your money, it is absolutely your right to throw out a boo bird or let people know how you feel. And I'm one of those people, Steve. If a movie sucks, I don't finish it. I get up and leave. You don't have to run back. This is buyer beware, but I get up, no doubt.
Sanch, we got to get running, okay?
All right, fellas. Good luck with Miami, Steve.
Thank you. Absolutely.
I see those moves.
All right. Well, here we go. 347-215-7598. A couple of minutes from now, we'll go through some news and notes on the next round. Gabe, who's next?
In the 619, you're live on the next round. 619.
How you doing, guys? Can you hear me?
Yes. Who is this?
Oh, this is Juan from San Diego. How you doing?
Juan, welcome aboard.
What's up, man?
Yeah, well, I was very glad to see Brandon Rios coming back and looking good. I think that he looked way better than he looked against Chavez. I think he got that spark back, and getting a win over his rival will get him in a better situation in my book. I think he looked good. And that's always good because he's a warrior, and he can make good fights against Ruslan, against Lucas. I think that's good for the sport, seeing him back. And the other thing is that during the week, we heard about Canelo versus Kirkland. I think that's a good fight. I actually like it better than the Cotto fight. Some people love the Cotto fight. I thought it was going to be a mismatch myself, but I think Kirkland Canelo's fight is going to bring a lot of action, so I'm happy to hear that. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, how come Steven Espinosa said that he was happy to hear that Al Haymon was on to network TV? Why didn't he choose CBS? Aren't they on the same network, like the same company?
That's one of the puzzling things that someone pointed this out to me. This being a time buy, maybe Al Haymon can take his fighters from one network to another. But you're right, if this was CBS and not NBC, there's a natural synergy. Well, last I checked, NBC and CBS, Gabe, aren't they rivals?
That's the thing that I don't understand. You keep saying, oh, this is great for the sport, and they're going to come on back, and I had the first battle refusal. And, I just feel like Steven is in CYA mode. He's just covering his ass. And, I get that. But, it just seems strange that he seems so in cahoots with Al, and so, like, the relationship's all great and everything's great, and this is going to only benefit Showtime. But, why aren't these fights happening on CBS? If that was the plan, was to kind of bolster, Showtime's roster and the profiles of these guys that will eventually be fighting under Steven's network. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Another issue, though, guys, with all these fighters being farmed out to other networks, which is great for them, and they're getting paid well, and attractive matchups, I think, for the fans. None of these fights are on Showtime. I did a little brief for Boxing Scene over the weekend. After last Saturday, which was January 17th, it looks like Showtime will not have any championship boxing in February. And I guess they're going to start up in March. So my question is, Juan, as a boxing fan, who I'm assuming you have a subscription to Showtime, what is the use of having it the next 5-6 weeks?
Well, only to watch the Showtime On Demand. That's the only thing I watch right now because they don't have anything on. I just thinking I'm not going to cancel it. Of course, I'm a hardcore fan. I know they're going to bring some fights. They've done it for the last 20, 30 years. I don't know, but I still have it. I'm a hardcore. But lastly, I had one other comment before I go. You were talking about Triple G and not having opponents and all that. I'm a big fan of Triple G, and I follow him. I think he's great for the sport. He's doing good. What do we say to those guys that are constantly saying that he is being called out by Andre Ward? Yeah, we know about that he was out, but now that he's back. Is he serious about it? When he says that he wants him, is he really serious, or what's going on there?
Great. Is Andre Ward going to move down to 160 like Chad Dawson did for him, moving down in weight? I don't understand. First of all, Andre Ward, this is what I'm hearing, guys. There's no real rush from HBO to give him a date despite his signing with Roc Nation. Gabe, have you heard anything about an Andre Ward fight being put on the HBO itinerary in the first quarter of this year? Because I certainly don't.
No. I think, what's the sexy matchup? I mean, maybe you put him in a tune-up? I let Roc Nation do that. HBO, I think they need to move away from the showcase matchups. But I can't really think of somebody that I'd want to see Ward in with that would kind of satisfy everybody. So, no, I haven't heard the slightest about Andre Ward being on HBO. I think it's his way of kind of keeping himself in the conversation and kind of, I don't know if it's jealousy in another guy's heart, but it's certainly a way to keep reminding people, hey, I'm good too, but I've been sitting on the bench for 2 years, and I'd like a piece of this guy. But, you know, I just don't think it's on. Golovkin's done the work. He's been out there building his franchise with K2 all over the world, and not just on his HBO dates. So it's not really incumbent on him to move up and satisfy Andre Ward. That just ain't going to happen. I don't see it. Not any.
And here's another issue. Andre Ward said, I'll fight anybody, anytime, any place. And then he says, but I need a couple of tune-ups first. And right there, there was a collective groan from everybody. Juan, we got to get running, okay?
All right, guys. Thank you.
If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you could do so at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. This is Steve Kim and Golden Gate Gabe Montoya on the next round. Gabe, who's next?
646, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Steve, how you doing? This is Baye the God. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Hey, listen, two things. Number one, if Kirkland doesn't have Ann, he gets knocked out in around three rounds. If he has Ann, he could probably go six or seven at best, but he gets knocked out. Number two, Heyman. In regards to what he's doing, I think it's the best thing for boxing in a sense. If he takes someone like Wilder, who just won this title, and puts him on NBC at prime time for maybe two fights in a row and builds a nice little fan base and then puts him back on, let's say, Showtime, and then after that take him to pay-per-view and he comes back to, let's say, NBC, you got a heck of a fan base. Because remember, back in the day, that's where Duran, Linick, and Hearns, Marvin, and all of them, they were basically on free TV. Now you have a situation where you have this premium cable situation that's basically, you know, not really doing anything, but just making money and doing pay-per-view. And pay-per-view hasn't really been doing the numbers that one would think it would be doing after having that format for the period of time that it has. Because remember, who's going to be the next pay-per-view star once Mayweather is gone, who's number one scared to fight Pacquiao, and Pacquiao is gone? There's really no other fighters out there that could generate any type of numbers on pay-per-view, because the person that I seen that they were trying to make into a pay-per-view star was Broner, and he basically got exposed two fights ago. So, I mean, if we look at it from a boxing fan perspective, what Al is doing is the best thing if he does one thing, make competitive fights. And I don't know if he's scared to make competitive fights based on the garbage that he was putting on HBO and Showtime. So,
well, Baye, hold on. Last year, we have now known why he did it. He was saving all the good stuff. The question is, and I like these opening matches that he's making in the first round of the PBC, question is sustainability. And I've been told by other sources that have, and other people have said it, one of his goals is to get rid of the premium cable networks and then also to get rid of pay-per-view. But his ultimate goal, in my opinion, is to monopolize the sport, drive everybody out, and eventually be the UFC of boxing.
Well, I don't think that could happen. It may could happen because, remember, in boxing as promoters, the personalities are out the door, basically. Don King and Bob Arum is basically leaving, so now you have Oscar, and Oscar is now, if you notice who he's been signing, is going to, you know, go more into the Latin market than he is going to be like Arum and Don King. So, I mean, me personally, as a fight fan, I think that it's great, but it all boils down to he has to pay back his investors. And I know some people who have dealt with him in the music business, and from everything that I've heard in regards to talking to them, he's a shrewd businessman, and he always made his investors' money in the music game. So I think that he's thought this out clearly. I think he has a plan. And I think that because of the amount of money that he's paying these fighters, and if you think about it, Steve, he really built up a couple of fighters to put himself in this position. And from what I've heard in the music business, he has no problem making sacrificial lambs to keep his thing going. So, you know, if let's say a Andre Browder doesn't win the fights like he's supposed to when he steps up against tough competition, then Al would just get rid of him. And, you know, he's making too much money to not win. If he wins, he's going to make even more money. But if he starts losing, Al will get rid of him. And you can talk to people in the music business who will give you a better understanding on how he operates. If a group wasn't making him money, he would give them one or two more chances to make money. And if they didn't, he would cut them off. And he would have good relationships. And there's a lot more behind the scenes in regards to the relationship with him, Jay-Z, and Beyonce that, you know, I can't get into with you.
Well,
but I'll say this to you.
It's out there. All I have to do is Google it. People know.
Right, but I'll say this to you in regards to Jay-Z. Jay-Z is really nothing more than a front man for a whole bunch of people, and I don't think Roc Nation is going anywhere, just like 50 Cent boxing promotional company didn't go anywhere. And Steve, it's always a pleasure chatting with you a little bit on Twitter and listening to your show, man. I really enjoy your information. Keep up the good work, buddy.
Thank you very much, and please continue to listen. 347-215-7598. At the top of the hour, we'll go through some news and notes. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
And just a note, you know, before anybody was ever mentioning Al Haymon, Steve Kim was writing about Al Haymon. So, 714, you're live on Brown.
Hey, it's Lenny the Fight Smith, guys. How you doing?
Lenny!
Good.
Welcome aboard.
So I think I might have the answer to why Al Haymon went with NBC instead of CBS. And it lies in the weekly ratings of NBC shows versus the weekly ratings of CBS shows. CBS it's more expensive. NBC time was cheaper to buy. And it wasn't a loyalty issue, I don't think. I think it was a cheaper time buy.
Yeah, I listen, CBS is a titan. I mean, they have an NFL package. They have shows like The Big Bang. And if you look at those Nielsen ratings that are in the newspapers every day, I think they are, the Tiffany Network, the number one rated across the board in terms of primetime viewing. And NBC Sports, they've tried to do other ventures like this where they've tried to fund a sport into prominence. Like, remember the XFL and I believe Arena Football? It didn't work. I know people want to make Haymon the savior. I give him credit because I knew he would make fights early on, but this is a time buy. This is not a network necessarily making a huge financial commitment to the sport. The other half of this is you better be able to attract sponsors.
Yeah, I think we lost Lenny there, but no, I agree. I think people, it goes back to when Showtime was looking strong with Golden Boy and everything was great, and everybody's like, oh my God, they're taking over, and then you know we get last year, which was not only terrible, but we saw Golden Boy kind of fracture and the CEO take off. Nobody's taking over nothing, really, and Al. Now, to start the year, it looks like the strongest entity in boxing. Things can change on a dime. And if this doesn't pan out, you know, in a couple of years, like Kathy Davis said, if he screws it up, none of us get back on. All the work that Kathy had done, and this is really what Al has done, is he's always let everybody else kind of do the work. You know, Showtime starts to invest more. Boom, he kind of comes in, buys a bunch of pieces of the puzzle, and starts controlling that after doing that for years at HBO. And lowering the bar there, lowers the bar over at Showtime with last year, and now he's moved on. But he moved into territories that were already been moved into by Kathy Duba, and then just bought her out of a market she developed. So we'll see what he does with it. I've read it since they call him the savior. I do like the idea of us moving away from the pay-per-view model because, and I think it's going to be a great thing when Floyd and Manny both retire because maybe, I don't know if they'll ever go back. Nobody ever says, all right, we're going to start charging $50 again. But the guarantees that both these guys command is what drives up those pay-per-view numbers. And so when you're not paying a guy $32 million, maybe you're going to get a better pay-per-view fight, and maybe you'll even get a lower price. So if we're heading that way, then maybe it is a good thing what Al's doing.
You know one thing that Al Heyman has done, and I give him credit, he has raised the bar across the board that people now in boxing understand they better start making some fights. They better stop screwing around. And look at some of the cards. This past weekend, notwithstanding, that was a bust for HBO. I like their upcoming schedule. You look at Golden Boy. Post-Heyman Schaefer, they are making some very good mid-level cards like March 12th. They have a possible triple header from San Antonio with Antonio Orozco taking on Emmanuel Taylor, Will Tomlinson taking on Francisco Vargas, and maybe Frankie Gomez in a bit of a step-up fight. I think tonight's card, Rocky Wars against Robinson Castellanos, I think that's a good fight. And Golden Boy's matchmakers have told me, he goes, Steve, the handcuffs are now off. We can start making fights. And I think every company now that's not on that side of the fence, that is not eating at the Heyman trough, they understand you better put your best foot forward. Gabe, one tweet here before we go to the phone lines again. Gabriel F. Cordero, Mayweather's Australia trip has been postponed to February 5. Does Floyd stay in the U.S. to finalize a Pacquiao agreement? Gabe, I've kind of seen this bandied about on Twitter the last hour. Who the hell really knows? Maybe he's working out his visa. I think people are making a lot of assumptions here as to why he's delaying his trip down under.
Yeah, I mean, I actually had read a report that he was having trouble getting into Australia because of his history of domestic abuse. I'm not kidding.
Right.
I think maybe he's having some issues there. Maybe that's what's pushed it back. Or, you know, who knows? You know, I just think it's until we know, then everything's possible. You know, he could end up fighting some other guy that not even Tony. You know, I've kind of just stopped guessing what Floyd's going to do. Mainly because whatever he does, I'm just generally not interested in.
Jeez.
That's just me. I mean, he's not giving me the fights I want to see. You know, I'm a fight fan. Like, forget my entire writing history. I grew up my whole life, just like you did, loving Marvin Hagler, loving Salvador Sanchez, Ricardo Lopez, Felix Trinidad, take a shot. And, you know, where are those guys? Those guys hit those runs where they, well, you know, Salvador died young, but he had some great fights, gave me some of the fights I wanted. Floyd has not done that since he's moved to 140. He gave me Gotti. Didn't really want that fight. I understood what it was for. And ever since then, it's just kind of been his whim. So, yeah, what am I supposed to be excited about?
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
In the 347, you're live on the next round. 347?
Yeah, hey, Gabe. Hey, Steve. And really enjoying the show. How's it going?
A milk car.
Thanks,
what's
man.
Going on?
What's up?
Pretty good, man. You guys went ahead head-to-head against the POTUS last week. Earlier on, you wouldn't go head-to-head against football, but against State of the Union, it was all good.
Let me tell you
Anyhow.
Something. I wouldn't go up against the Pro Bowl, but no matter who the president is, Democrat or Republican, I'll go against them. I will. Can't lie.
Yeah. So, so Gabe, you're not looking forward to Daniel Edouard against Andre Ward live on HBO?
Oh, my God. They wouldn't do it. God, please, no. That's
it is a serious predicament.
Taylor.
I don't know what kind of tune-up would be acceptable to us. It's a terrible thing. But in all seriousness, something that went under the radar a bit is that Klitschko is going to be fighting the Garden in April, and I'm interested in your thoughts on that fight.
I like Klitschko big, and there are different reasons as to why that went from the Barclays Center to the Madison Square Garden. But, you know, Gabe, I always talk about who are the great draws in North America, who are the guys that move the needle. And the Klitschkos have always been underrated in this regard. If you look at their HBO ratings and the attendance that they have done in New York specifically, I mean, they basically sold every ticket in that place for Sultan Ibragimov back in, I believe, 2007, the guy does matter. As boring as we think he is and as monotonous as some of his fights are, he does resonate with the public as the recognized heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah, and it's a rare thing to get to see him these days, you know. I think it's going to do well. I lean towards Vladimir just because longevity, activity. I think Brian Jennings did himself a real disservice not being more active, man. You know, he fought twice last year, and he's just kind of waiting around, I mean, for his shot. And I can understand not wanting to lose your spot, but, you know, at some point you're kind of like negotiating against yourself by not taking any risks and not shaking the rust off. And it wasn't like he was the world's most developed fighter, you know, already. I mean, he's 30 years old, but he's got less than, he's only got 19 fights. So, you know, I just don't see a lot of reasons to pick him.
I agree. I would have much rather seen him, let's say, in a fight with a guy like Tyson Fury or even the other UK prospect. Shoot, I can't remember his name off the top of my head right
David
now.
David Price?
But the Olympian. The Olympian.
Anthony Joshua.
Yes.
Too soon
Joshua.
For that, though. Amilcar, that is way too soon. Anthony Joshua, as much as I like him, let's be honest, he has not even had what I'd call a quote-unquote real fight thus far in his career.
Well, that's what I thought about our man Deontay Wilder. But as he said, what the question is now.
But he also had 32 fake fights under his belt. So they at least worked in volume.
That is true. I'll give you that one. That is true. Anyways, guys, I'm just enjoying the show, as always. Thanks again.
Thank you, and you have a good night there, Amilcar. Again, in 1 hour on Fox Sports 1, we have a very good card. I like what Golden Boy is doing, though, Gabe, as they turn the page here. That, I mean, last year things reached rock bottom when Eric Gomez is just getting excoriated by the media and the press rows guys over Salco Garcia. And I said, you know, there's one problem. I don't think Golden Boy was really responsible for that card.
Yeah, that's the thing. I kind of, you know, in retrospect, you know, I've taken them to task, you know, with my mismatch reports, although I spread that around for all the promoters. But you look at some of the fights, and it was something I always used to hear when I was down there working the beat from other promoters or matchmakers, managers, that Golden Boy seemed to be getting away with matchups that nobody else would. But now that I kind of am watching Heyman's fights and seeing his influence, I start to now think that maybe the criticism should have been leveled at Al and his ability to get fights through that nobody else seems to get through. And, you know, the philosophy with Diaz and Gomez, the matchmakers there at Golden Boy, has always been, you know, kind of Oscar's mentality. And what he touts is, you know, best fighting the best, or just, you know, fights that are going to be good action-packed matchups for the fans. And that's what seems to be happening now that they've got the reins. So, I'm very curious to see where they go. I think they're very important to the sport of boxing. As the previous callers said, or one of the previous callers said, there aren't any characters left in the sport. But, you know, Oscar De La Hoya, whatever scandals he's had, he's still Oscar De La Hoya. He's still a gold medal winner, good-looking ex-multiple division champion, and one of the last superstars the sport has ever had. Or one of the biggest it's ever had. So I think that they can still do big things. But it comes down to the fights, like you say.
Gabe, last week at the Golden Boy offices, there was a press conference to officially announce that Randy Caballero would be making the first defense of his IBF 22-pound title in late February. And just, you know, talking to people, off-the-cuff conversations, interviewing them on camera, I get the sense Golden Boy is here for the long haul. Oscar seems very rejuvenated. Staff seems very excited. And one thing struck me. They are bringing back something that we used to go to on a monthly basis, the Fight Night Club. It's not going to be at the Nokia Theater. But, Gabe, the fact that they're willing to go back to their roots and do a series which is not going to make them $1 million, in fact, it's probably a loss leader, that shows me right there they are in this thing for the long haul.
I like that series. Fight Night Club was really fun. I mean, just on all levels. You know, the DJ out there was in a nice setting. I'm curious, you know, where they'll put it here. But, you know, it was kind of like a nightclub atmosphere. And it kind of just was welcoming to a younger audience. And then the fights were all good. They were all fun fights. We had some, you know, gratuitous Christian Favela, guys sitting around here. But, you know, Favela gave Jesse Vargas all he could handle. And a lot, you know, some people, myself included, kind of wondered if Jesse had actually won that, as I recall. That was a tough fight for him. So, you know, I mean, I think it's kind of almost like bringing that Ontario series, you know, out closer to L.A. And, that they do at the Doubletree. I think development shows are really fun and can be, you know, when done well, like Fight Night Club was, can be a real treat for boxing fans.
Gabe, what I'm hearing, and they announced it, it'll start in March, and I was told it'll be at the Belasco Theater in downtown L.A. Gabe, last week the Spike Network made an announcement with Heyman and the PBC series. They'll be doing a monthly Friday night show. March 13th, they kick off. Jose Cito Lopez takes on Andre Berto, and then I think Sean Porter will be taking on Robert Garcia. Again, I got to tip my cap. I think for Spike, that's a good solid doubleheader.
Yeah, those are fine fights. And, you know, it's not a super showcase. Lopez Berto is kind of a trippy fight. Who's got more laps? You know, Andre is showing a little bit more, but he's never really fully developed, doesn't move his head enough. You know, but Lopez isn't a big puncher, so that may not be a problem. But Jesus Soto Carras wasn't really thought to be too much of a threat, and look what happened there. I think it could be a knockdown action fight, and it's kind of similar to Rios Alvarado in that it's a fight for who gets to move forward and who has to look at it, you know, and really think about, is this the end of the road at a young age?
Friday night fights, main events. There is life after NBC Sports, hopefully for Kathy Duva. Carl Dargan takes on Tony Lewis. Gabe, Dargan in his last fight, we had to get off the canvas. I was impressed. It was the first time that he made a statement that he didn't just win. He actually, like, grabbed you by the collar and said, hey, I'm a guy to keep an eye on.
I've always liked Carl, and I've just been bummed that he hasn't been moved quite the way that he should have been. But now, I mean, this moved him so slowly. For a guy who's 29, you know, again, he's got, you know, 17 fights. I think he's got the goods for his size, you know, 5'9", 69-inch reach. I think he's got real power. And I love what Main Event is doing, and they're keeping him busy. They're getting him in the right fights, and the fights that don't just make him look good, but that bring out some character and some depth. Tony Lewis is going to be there all night. He's an experienced fighter. He's been fighting his whole life, and he's well-conditioned guy, loves to dig to the body. He could be a problem if you're not ready for him. I expect this to be an early entry for Fight of the Year, to be honest. If everybody's
really?
I think style-wise, they're going to bring it. If they're both, you know, completely right, no quarter is going to be given. It's going to be a fun fight.
Tony Lewis last year was supposed to get steamrolled by Ivan Redcatch, and you know what? Some people thought he may have done enough to win that fight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think this is going to be a pretty good matchup here. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, and tell us, if you're a Showtime subscriber, with Showtime only having February 13th a Showbox card, and I believe now March 20th, do you keep your Showtime subscription on your cable bill? Let us know. Gabe, who's next?
In the 716, you're live on the next round. 716.
Our first knockdown of the night.
714. 714, you're live on the next round.
Hey, it's Lenny the Fight Smith again.
Lenny, Lenny, let me tell you something. This, you showed more resiliency than Mike Alvarado did this weekend in coming back.
No.
Oh, I also don't have a drug and alcohol problem. Well, maybe an alcohol problem. But.
He was just thirsty. He was just thirsty, guys. Jeez. Okay. So what's going on, Lenny?
Yeah, that was actually my next topic that I wanted to talk about. I mean, he just didn't look right for months, and nobody on HBO was talking about it. Nobody. I mean, you guys were talking about it. Fight fans were talking about it, but nobody in any official sense was talking about it. It was nowhere on ESPN. He just didn't look right. That sparring video with Mike Alvarado, just, it looked like me when I was like 7 years old, just throwing haymakers around. He looked weird.
That mugshot
yeah.
looked like a meth addict. I mean, if Tyrone Biggins, that old character from the Chappelle Show, the crackhead, was a Mexican-American from Denver, it would have looked like that.
Yeah, it was a little... That's what I mean. I feel I don't always want to be the, you know, butt breaker guy, but or the bearer of bad news, but you have to look at the company that sold this to it. HBO didn't even mention the Marquez fund, which I thought was very strange. I mean, how much was this, you know, Mike kind of surprising everybody by caring so little, and how much of it was, well, we'll just get this guy to the prom and see what happens. He was a bit like the junk soap star, you know, he just kind of fell all apart. Sad to watch.
Yeah, I think one of you guys tweeted about it right after, too. It's just there's no level of quality control. I mean, we get the fight announced. We know who's fighting who. But at that point, that's it. I mean, there was no quality control for this fight. And I think the writing was on the wall for a lot of us. I think we could – something just didn't feel right from weeks before the fight, and there was nothing done about it.
I think that if you're HBO, you tell Top Rank, very simply – if you even announce Mike Alvarado's name, we're going to hang up on you. Get him out of here. And I would send a stern message to all fighters. Guys, you perform like that, and it's okay to get knocked out early. It happens. But if we believe, in our estimation, that you gave less than an honest effort before the fight and it shows up during the fight, you're on timeout. Get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you say, next man up. And this is a sport where professionalism, you know, means it's your life, man. It's a lifestyle, box. It's not just something you kind of like, all right, I want to rush it and get in shape, make the weight in the last 3 weeks. Mike's belly looks off. Like I said, he didn't look like he was able to take punches. I think that just comes 8 weeks of fighting. It takes, if you've been soft and you've been living not quite right, it takes a period of time, like 2 weeks or so, to get back into that kind of fighter mode. And then hopefully something good comes out of the rest of camp. But to do it like 3 weeks in camp, I mean, you're fooling yourself. And worse, you're fooling paying boxing fans.
Lenny, is there anything else we could do for you?
Just a quick dash at Andre Ward. I mean, I don't understand how HBO can continue to try out Andre Ward to call fights against guys that he could potentially be fighting. I remember watching, Roy Jones Jr., he used to call fights, and he recused himself from calling a fight because it involved a guy that he promoted. He's like, you know what, I can't call this fight. I'll see you guys at the main event. And with Andre Ward, it's just like, He's either got an agenda where he's bashing the guy that's in there fighting because he has no desire to fight him in the future, or he's pumping him up because he thinks that he could be a cash cow down the line. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Gabe, you made this point. No active current fighter should be in that role.
No, because here's the other thing is, you know, besides it, just I don't really mind him, you know, pumping people up as a future opponent or whatever. You know, these guys got to self-promote, too, and that's part of the boxer's job. But he gets a look into opponent's, potential opponent's corner that no fighters could get if you're going to face those guys. He gets to see all the behind-the-scenes stuff, everything up close. There's probably a lot of footage we don't see. And I think that's a problem. But, yeah, you know, if they're going to give us Andre Ward, I don't have a problem with his commentary. I generally like it. I want to beat with That's all I ask from HBO. Give me a real live beat reporter with some other insight besides just the fighter and besides just Tim Lampley. That's really what they're sorely needing more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Lenny, drive safely out there in the rain.
Thanks, guys.
All right. If you want to call in, we got about 17 minutes left here on the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network with Steve Kim and Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. That number, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
Let's see. Another 646. Been waiting a long
time.
Hey,
guys. This is Domingo from New York. How's it going?
What's going on?
What's up, Domingo?
Hey, guys. Listen, what's the status with Mayweather? Because I'm going to tell you this. I don't think people are going to want that quarter fight. I won't bother. And most of the people that I know won't bother with that fight, no matter how good Cotto looked against Martinez. Because he basically toured in his last fight, and I want to get you guys thought.
Well, Domingo, I agree with you. I think there's two factors here. Number one, most intelligent boxing fans understand that Cotto beat the shell of a shell of a shell of Sergio Martinez. Also, I think there was such an anticipation over the Cotto Alvarez fight, given the fact it's a fresh new fight, we haven't seen it before. and there's the Mexican-Puerto Rican rivalry, and to just have that taken right from under us, it's a buzzkill. It's a buzzkill, Domingo.
Yeah, guys, it's pretty bad. Listen, I was actually planning to go for the Pacquiao Mayweather. It would have happened in May 2nd, but if Alvarez fights Kirkland, I might just go to San Antonio. I think that's a pretty good fight, and I guess, you know, you can pretty get some good tickets. But one thing, guys, is Alvarez, I know he's stuck on those Mexican days, but really, does he really have to? Just because, you know, he's still not accomplished. He's not Julio Cesar Chavez or Oscar De La Hoya, you know. Chavez and De La Hoya, they had to fight, you know, Chavez for Edwin Rosario, Big Measure Taylor. You know, Alvarez, his biggest fight, he lost. So his claim to those dates, you know, they're a little, you know, he's still having accomplished anything.
You know, I don't disagree. Gabe, I wrote an article about 2 weeks ago. I said, what's in a date? And I understand the cultural influences and the buying power and how many consumers they are. But I've always said, think fights, then the date. Not the date and then, oh, let's come up with a fight with the Mexican.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I don't go, oh, man, it's September. Time for me to spend like $70 on a fight, you know, and it doesn't matter which one. It's just, you know, that's how I celebrate my people. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I agree with you. And I don't know if boxing is shooting itself in the foot by doing something like this, by having Cotto Mayweather 2 on the same date as Canelo Kirkland. Because they're in two different cities. Maybe if they're in the same city, it would be a problem. It also depends, is Canelo going to be, is that going to be a pay-per-view fight, or is that going to be a regular HBO fight?
No, that's going to be regular HBO. And I'll tell you one
thing.
Well,
then we're all good.
Canelo Kirkland better not be at the Thomas and Wiggity 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 Whack, okay? That's an antiquated building. And for the fans,
yeah,
it is just a nightmare because you got to hitchhike to get a cab. It's not a good
terrible
scene. And to me, if you want to make a statement, you go to San Antonio and you draw 45,000 people. That's how you open eyes, not playing second fiddle in the 702.
No doubt. No, you fill a stadium and you go, I'm a draw. This is my date. And look, my stadium has a bunch of Mexicans in it on Cinco de Mayo. You know, what do you got? I think it's the only way. If you're going to go big, you know, if you're going to do this, you got to go big. And I agree 100%.
And, Domingo, you know what I find interesting? I already know the Mexicans are very upset at Cotto because he feels as though they ripped away a fight that they wanted. I actually see some Puerto Rican backlash as it relates to Miguel Cotto. And I'm not, you know, and I'm not saying that fight's not going to do a lot of pay-per-views, because I believe it will, but it's telling that a guy like Cotto is feeling it from his own people.
Yeah, it's a fight that nobody wants, and you know, people already want that Mayweather-Pacquiao. But again, when it comes to Alvarez, you know, what is his stubbornness? Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we hate Mayweather for not fighting Lopez, but he's the biggest star in the sport right now. And I guess when you're the biggest star, you could pick whatever thing. You know, Muhammad Ali did the same thing. Sugar Ray Leonard did the same thing. And I guess Mayweather has that right. He's the biggest star. You know, we should just stay president. But Alvarez, why he keeps pushing for those seats?
You know, he's a precocious kid. That's the best part about him, and it may be the worst part about him. Domingo, we got to run, okay?
Thank you, guys. Take it easy.
Here's a tweet from, I love this handle, Mexican style, GGG. Is it true Les Moonves told TMT and Heyman they will not get dates on Showtime until Floyd Manny fight is made? That's what the Sweet Science reported. You know, I've heard that brandied about. I don't know how true it is, because it's all said and done. Gabe, Mayweather has a contract. Moonves' company signed off on it. He can stomp and scream and threaten. Mayweather has a deal, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me. And it seems, well, didn't Espinoza say that these threats and all that are not real? So I think Stephen's credibility, you know, as this all shakes out, is going to go up or it's going to go down as things play out, you know, such as it is. But, yeah, I've heard that too. And it's, you know, I've heard it's been disproved. I've heard it's true. Who knows? That's why I just, you know, I don't work for Fight Hype, so I don't know what's going on in Floyd's camp. Let's head back to the phone lines here. The 787, you're live on the next round.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Javier, what's going on?
First of all, a couple of things. Regarding the Mayweather-Cotto fight, if it happened, I think some of the backlash, if people are mad, because people don't think Cotto can win. When he was fighting Canelo, I think a lot of people thought Cotto had a real shot to beat Canelo. But people doesn't want to see Puerto Ricans lost again. And Cotto is a very heavy underdog, despite the fact that he looked okay against Martinez and Delby, who know neither of those guys is Mayweather. So I think that has something to do with it.
No, there's no doubt. You know what they're going to sell? They're going to sell because they're going to make, if that happens, and again, I'm not making any guarantees. I'm not going to be Joe Namath here. But they're going to do some sort of catch weight of 154.5 or 155, make it for the middleweight title, and they're going to sell it as Floyd Mayweather tries to become the modern-day Henry Armstrong by holding three belts and three weight classes. Okay, and that's flimsy, but what they're also going to sell is that the new and improved Miguel Cotto with Freddie Roach is going to put him over the top. That's going to be the selling point of that potential fight.
And one more thing. If it doesn't happen, what the hell is going to Miguel Cotto? If Mayweather doesn't fighting Pacquiao and Kirtland fights on the other day, what the hell does Cotto do?
You know what I think they're going to try to do because they've talked about it? I think they're going to do Tim Bradley. Now, I am a huge Tim Bradley fan. I think he's one of the best fighters in the world. But there's a reason why we have weight classes. Tim Bradley is basically a very strong, muscular junior welterweight fighting at 147. In no world of mine is he a legitimate 54-pounder, guys.
Let me tell you why I don't think they do the Tim Bradley fight. I believe that's the other Gabby's catch-out.
It is, but you know what? In this case, Gabby will be Al Haymon. He has both sides. He wins either way.
Yeah, but if Cotto were to lose to Bradley, which I don't think will happen, then, okay, he has Bradley, but I think you lose one of them if you put them to fight. You understand what I say?
No, I do understand, but here's the other issue. I've been told that Bradley, with this new contract extension that he signed prior to the Pacquiao rematch, has exorbitant minimums. I mean, he gets paid very well. And you can do Diego Chavez once in a while, but to make that contract float, you better start having some pay-per-view fights. And from Cotto's perspective, big name, it'd be on pay-per-view. We could have it in New York in early June. And you're the much bigger guy. So sometimes you got to make a sacrifice. But you're right. But you know what? I don't think, Gabe, there's a lot of sympathy for Cotto's plans based on what has transpired the last 2 weeks.
And one last thing, guys. Do you think that the Rocky Martinez fight, Salido, gets made? And if it does, doesn't that fight, I know I'm Puerto Rican and I'm going to watch it live, but doesn't that fight need to have an American TV outlet? That's
Told by Peter Rivera that they think it's going to get done. Obviously, April 11th becomes complicated now because Danny Garcia has been scheduled to fight on NBC. And, you know, last time I talked to Peter, and I'll be talking to him later on, he says we're going to do an independent pay-per-view. Salido is aboard, and they're going to go to Puerto Rico. And I very, very, very much look forward to being on the island on April 11th, and I'll DVR NBC. Let's just put it that way. Javier,
okay,
we got to get running, okay? Here is a tweet from our friend Amilcar. I'm canceling Showtime and signing up for De La Hoya TV, traveling lifestyle.
Well, yeah, I hope your Spanish is good. I've got a few more calls here. Let's try to bust through them. In the 602, you're live on the next round.
Got Alvarado there.
How about the 786? 786? Hello, guys? 78.
Yes, who is this?
I'm Daniel. Good to be with you, gentlemen.
Good. What's going on, Daniel?
No, but it's good. I just want to give a little take on probably why Canelo would probably challenge Mayweather. I understand the Curtis Kid situation, but since Mayweather didn't break, I think, 1 million pay-per-views and 2 fights in a row, doesn't it seem like he's vulnerable business-wise then?
He is, but at the end of the day, his numbers have not dipped nearly as much as Pacquiao's, and when you still say who's the pound-for-pound king, whether you love him or loathe him, it is Floyd Mayweather. And at the same time, is it mutually assured destruction? But I'm not going to lie to you, the anarchist in me, I want to see Cotto Mayweather take place and to see Canelo Kirkland in San Antonio. I think that would be fascinating to see how the markets would be split on that particular day.
That would be interesting. That would be interesting, I think. And another thing, like, do you think any other Heyman guys would do or would do what Matisse did and just say, I'm going to be more loyal to Oscar than to Al?
You know, I don't think so, because they're all getting paid well. And I got to give Matisse credit, man. This guy basically said, you know what, the Golden Boy's been good to me. And he didn't say this, though, but he was forced to sign before the Danny Garcia fight, through Richard Schaefer to Heyman. And you know what? Loyal fighters to me, I know it's not a trait that we talk about enough, Gabe. We always talk about left hooks or chins or right hands. You know, loyalty to me counts. Character should mean something. And I like the fact Matisse is willing to say, wait a minute, I want to be involved in some real fights here.
Yeah, there's no question. I think also it's a matter of, I want to be in charge of my destiny. And for some people, you know, they may be like, I'm going to put my trust in Al Heyman. He's a billionaire. He must know what he's doing. And, you know, I wonder about those guys. Because you look at Berto, and he's made a lot of good money. And he's actually kept his money, from what I understand, invested it well. He won't have to fight again. Now he's kind of fighting for pride. But he kind of reminds me of Roy Jones after being knocked out. Like, kind of hanging around trying to get that respect that he cashed out on when he was fighting, you know, Mailman and Cops on HBO. You know, there's only one time to get it. And there's only one time to develop and learn as a fighter, I think. And that's when you're young. Andre passed all that. And I look at him, I look at Jermaine Taylor, and I say, guys, you know, those are big checks and everything. And, it's really great what Al's doing for you. But remember that there's only one way to develop as a fighter and as a draw. And you look at Jermaine Taylor and you look at Andre Berto, those guys are cautionary tales, in my opinion, not so much success stories.
Hmm. We got to get running here. Thank you for the call. We have 3 minutes. Gabe, let's try to sneak in another one.
All right. In the 111, I think it's a Skype number, an overseas number. You're live on the next round. Hello? Can you hear us? Are you there?
You went AWOL on us, Gabe.
Yeah, and I believe I have TKO'd everybody at this point. So that's it for the calls this evening.
Yeah, you know, listen, I think it's an interesting time in boxing, Gabe, but I'll say this. Before anyone starts making these hard proclamations of takeovers or monopolies or the dominance within the marketplace, we have to see how everything plays out. What I find interesting is that Heyman is signing more and more fighters. I mean, he is loading up. I think pretty soon he'll be close or near or over 200 fighters. My question is this. Is he going to water down his own product like the UFC? And then how can you maintain quality control when you're just signing a bunch of jags? As Bill Parcells would say, J-A-G's, just another guy. And even within all this, here's another thing that has to happen. That PBC has to be able to create crossover stars. Now, they've never been on this platform.
Right.
They're certainly going to have an opportunity. I think that's going to be the number one thing above and beyond creating an audience and getting sponsors. Can you create stars?
I want to see them create fighters that actually, when they get to the top level, they don't just have one defense and lose the belt or get a mandatory against somebody that they didn't want to fight and lose their status, lose their, you know, their zero or lose their belt. That's what I want to see out of Al, because I'm not seeing the whole package. He's great at getting TV deals and getting his guys more money, but I haven't seen him really build a fighter, and I haven't seen him build a draw like the old ways, like the real promoters do. So let's see it.
So there you have it. That's it for this week's edition of The Next Round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.